Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my great privilege to be joined tonight by Dave and Alex, who are monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave and Alex.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Good evening.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Good.
Good. It just happens to be 3 o'clock in Zambia.
Let's see, that's 3 in the morning.
That's right.
Yes, probably you're all ready to be sound asleep right now.
Yeah, I think our body's somewhere over the Atlantic at this point.
Right. So tell us all about your trip.
Well, the trip, this is Alex, the trip was fabulous. It was short, in my opinion, because we were having such a wonderful time and accomplishing so many great things. Teresa will attest to it. That it almost felt like we could have stayed there for maybe a few more weeks.
Great. Great. How was it for you, Dave?
It was great. It felt good to, you know, to kind of be on the ground and making so many things happen that felt like they're really powerful. I think, you know, for me, the thing, even though we didn't spend a lot of our time on the trip on it, I think the thing to me that was the kind of the biggest was the possibility of expanding the feeding program there. We've been feeding 400 plus, I'm not sure of the exact number, for some time, and we have it in place now to double the feeding program in the next few months. And I mean, there's a lot going on, but to me that's kind of the biggest thing right now, to think about 400 or more children eating every day and, you know, and really surviving. Because of that, that was just really powerful and inspiring to me.
Yeah, it's very powerful and inspiring to me too. I was just starting to choke up. I noticed as you were talking, you know, to be able to, you know, just picturing in my mind's eye 400 kids who are
it's such a privilege. Of course, you can get a sense of it from the photos, but in the blog. But it's such a privilege to be there and see them, and get to know them and shake their little hands and everything, and then to know the good that's being done, you know, and the real desperate kind of situation that would be there if we weren't there helping these fellows out. It would be, you know, it's really, really good. And, you know, the thing, too, that was really gratifying to me is that, you know, there's such a powerful team on the ground there. We have, I actually don't know the exact number of people we've employed, but it's a big crowd. And they're there, they're trained, they're ready. And we had several conversations with the team there, and they all said, yes, let's do it. We want to do it. We're ready. This is what we're here for. This is why we're involved with this organization. Yes, let's double the program, and let's end some more suffering here in Cantalumpa.
Yeah, it's great. It's really exciting. And with a team that's so well trained, it's not like you're starting from scratch. You know, there are processes in place, people who are trained. It's just doubling the orders.
Yeah, that's so true, Michael, because they have such big hearts. I don't know if you know this, but for the longest time, majority of the folks that were on the Living Compassion team in Africa, they were volunteers. And when we were talking to Teresa, she thinks that's the strongest thing that they have going for them, is that they were willing to do all of that without getting paid at all. And it was only, you know, months later that they started to actually get paid for the work that they were doing there. So that kind of testifies to the, you know, commitment and the big-heartedness of the folks involved there to make a change in their own community.
Yeah, it is amazing to volunteer given their circumstances.
Given their circumstances.
I mean, given that they have so little.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very little. And they are making a lot of change with the little that they do have. That's what makes an impression for me. When I was doing the interviews with them, the thing that they consistently said was that there's nothing that this group of people can't do when they all get together and do it. They started to create this farm, and you haven't seen this yet in the blog, but it's coming out shortly, where they have this enormous farm that they're starting out there. And we had the privilege of going out there to see it. And this is something that they did of their own initiative. They travel quite a distance to get to it. And they go out every day and start transforming the bush into a veritable, you know, farm, and the prospect of them being able to farm, grow their own food, possibly get a hammer mill to grind it all up to feed the community, it's just enormous that they're just jumping in and doing something for themselves in such a big way.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I was just thinking as you were talking that it sounds like practice. You know, we see what is stopping us and we learn to move beyond that, and suddenly a whole world just opens up.
Yeah, it's really true. It's very inspiring for us to witness that and to see that kind of willingness and that kind of generosity from people.
Yeah,
something
great.
Else I'm really excited about, Alex mentioned it, is the hammer mill, which is a machine that grinds the corn that they grow. And we spent quite a bit of effort on this trip finding out what is a hammer mill exactly and what are the different choices. And before we left, they had begun building the structure that will house the hammer mill, and we're hoping to buy it possibly on the next trip, which happens very soon in January. And what's exciting to us about it is that, you know, we have a vision of the project being sustainable and being, you know, self-sustainable. So it will ultimately create itself and support itself, hopefully. And this is kind of the first big step in that direction, is to, you know, basically we're making a business there, or they are making a business there. It was their idea. You know, they said, you know, this is what we want to do, and so we're helping facilitate that. So they're going to become millers, hopefully. And, you know, people will grow, you know, in the area grow tons of corn. That's their staple food. And people bring their corn to us, hopefully, to get it ground. And we get a little bit of money for that to help support the project. And the people in the community don't have to travel so far to get their corn ground. And so it's kind of a win-win. And the hope is that through this effort, we'll learn more about, and they'll learn more about, how can they support themselves and support the project and on their end. And, you know, take a really big step towards having the whole thing be sustainable.
Yeah, it's really great. And it inspires me on this end to want to support more, knowing that what we are supporting is their own independence and their own learning. It's great.
Yeah, it's true. And it's been that way from the beginning in a really interesting way. I think that's what makes us different there from what we see a lot in Africa, because there's a lot of groups, you know, doing things there, but it's their project. It really is. And I think that's what lights them up, is it's their project. And, you know, we come in, you know, we have the resources on our side of the ocean to help with that. And we fundraise here, and we, you know, tell people what's going on there, so people here have the opportunity to help out. But it really is theirs. And so it's, I think I project that they find that to be really empowering and inspiring themselves. And it just gives them an opportunity to find out what they can do, which I think is exciting for all of us. Of course, we get to find out what we can do also at the same time. And, you know, so it's I left feeling like, and we said this in one of the blogs that hasn't come out yet, that it's like we're one people. You know, even though we live so far apart, but it's not like we're two groups. It's like we're one people doing this one thing, and that really feels good.
Yeah, it feels really good.
What's coming up for me as Dave is talking about it, it's like, you know, we're a springboard for each other. You know, so they get the idea. You know, there's a sewing co-op over there, and we show up, and all of a sudden, they're getting jobs from people that we know. To create great things for, well, I don't want to give away too many surprises. It's in the blog too. It seems like they're also doing some more gardening. And when we were there, they were selling some greens that I saw. So it's really neat just seeing how they are actually jumping in and making something happen, you know, from the what little we do.
It's great. It's great. And I'm not going to let either of you go without mentioning the blogs. And it's hard for me not to gush, and I restrain myself from emailing the guest master too many times to tell them how wonderful they are. And for me, it's just really like I'm right there on the ground with you, and I'm being pulled over by the police and you know, seeing the hammer mill, and it's just, it's, you know, your commitment to that and communicating that is just, for me, a really wonderful experience.
Yeah, thanks a lot for saying that, Michael. And it was fun this time because we added some technical parts to it that we haven't before. There's quite a lot of video in the blogs, and so if people haven't seen it, it is kind of an interesting, it's a window into the world there that I think would be really difficult without that kind of technology. So, yeah. It's fun for us too to create them, also, obviously, because you know, it's just we get to share what we are experiencing there.
Wonderful, Dave, Alex, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Okay,
thanks,
great,
Michael.
Yep. Good night. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. It's good to have those guys back.
Oh, yeah.
Just in time for the great snowstorm of the year in Calaveras County.
Wow. Wow.
What a welcome home.
Tell us about it.
Oh, well, it was amazing simply because I don't think anybody had any idea it was coming.
Oh, wow.
Nobody I talked to. You know, it wasn't on any weather report that we got. And so it starts raining, and then, you know, in the middle of the night, suddenly it's very, very quiet. And of course, when the power goes off, then it gets really, really quiet. Now, of course, East Coast people are rolling their eyes now, but in California, this is very exciting stuff. So, so we were snowed in for whatever period of time, and they got home, and I think there'll be pictures of this coming out. I don't know, but the guys, you know, make their way back from all the way across the ocean from Zambia, and then have to hike into the monastery because it snowed in.
Wow!
Yeah.
Wow! I can't wait to see some pictures.
High adventure.
Great.
Yeah.
Sherry, I'd like to mention a couple things on the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Sabina is a great New Year's retreat, and this will be our second year there.
Yes, it will. Yeah, yeah. And I think there's going to be a good crowd. I think there's still room. The thing, of course, the reason that it's our annual New Year's retreat is because, you know, Carmel was just too small. We love Carmel, but we outgrew it, and Santa Sabina can just about hold as many people as we can gather together for something like this. And so, excited about it.
Yes, yes, me too.
Good food, good yoga, good sitting, good workshops.
Great.
Yeah, no physical labor.
Other than hiking up the hills?
Yes, other than going out and hiking around and taking in the beauty.
Yes, yes. Another thing coming up is the at-home working meditation workshop, which will be this Saturday the 12th.
Yes. Yes, it will. That last one was such a stunner. I guess truly people requested more. And I've actually talked to people who missed the first one and heard about this one and are just wildly excited to get to participate. So,
yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Also, there's the Best Year Yet workshop in Palo Alto, and that's at the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
That's an annual event, which is always a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And this Saturday, if people aren't going to stay home and do a meditation retreat and they're anywhere near San Jose, they can come and spend the morning with me.
Like I will be doing.
Like you will, for instance, be doing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And so that's at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, 9:30 to 12:30, this Saturday morning, December 12th.
Yeah, so if people are far away. I don't actually know what the hours of the at-home retreat are. I don't know if you can come and be with us and then race home and do the rest of the retreat day at home, but probably.
And the other thing that's coming up is to keep an eye on the website in the next week or so for an update on new and exciting spring offerings.
A lot of work going into getting a calendar up there that people can you know, so people can really plan their, especially retreat and workshop. You know, if you're going to come for a week or something like that, then it's really helpful to know well in advance get time away from family and work and that sort of thing. So,
And Sherry, we have a couple of callers here.
Good. I want to say one other thing that's coming up. And that is that January 1st, we're going to be also launching the Practice Everywhere.
Great.
And so that's going to be through Facebook and Twitter and text messages and that sort of thing, an attempt to help people stay just in more conscious awareness throughout the day.
Yes.
So you're going along in your day and you have your vibrating watch and you have, you know, you're watching for white or red or whatever color is bringing you back so that you can stop, drop, and breathe. And then you get a little message from us on your phone or your screen or whatever that just, again, helps you, supports you in coming back here, being here, waking up for a moment, remembering who you are, making the choice to practice. So that's going to start on January 1st as well.
And that's what we need, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Constant support.
Yes.
Because the habits of going unconscious are just so deeply ingrained in all of us. Egocentric karmic conditioning has, you know, had a lot of time in the youngest people. It's had a lot of time to get really entrenched, and we need a lot of assistance and support for going up against it. So that's what all of this is about.
Great. Great. Are you ready for some callers?
Yeah, good.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Rebecca.
Hey.
How are
you?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Excellent. What's going on?
Well, I was just hanging a sign on my wall that says drop the conversation. I thought I was about the third caller, and then I hear, you are unmuted, so I rushed back to the phone here. Always a good sign to look at first thing in the morning. I wanted to put something out here that I saw a couple of days ago that felt huge in this karma thing I've been looking at. I got a look at this really deep held belief through the lens of these relationships that I've been working with in the last few years, and the belief is a real deep belief that I'm alone. And how I saw it was so cool. I got this little, this insight just dropped in that you know, my marriage, I felt that story, that belief was being reinforced all the time, and what I felt to be a very alone in my marriage, you know. And then this other relationship that I had after my marriage ended was just the opposite, but it still upheld the belief that I'm alone. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you mean when you were in that relationship, you didn't feel so alone?
Yeah, but then, of course, that relationship ended, and
I
saw that the underlying belief was I'm alone either because I see I have someone and it can go away and see I'm alone, or you can be with someone and be alone. But it just was like everything points to I am alone, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, which is a true story. Because the I who is saying that is an illusion of being separate from life.
Yeah.
So that is how the ego sees itself.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. And a while back you talked about these kind of four entities, one being the incarnation, one is the illusion of the separate self, and you know, and ego, and then egocentric karmic conditioning, and center, or the mentor, I guess. And I hadn't ever really thought of the illusion of a separate self as sort of an entity like that before, but it's so helpful to really see that, that that perspective is really, in a way, distinct from conditioning. Would you say that?
Well, because it's more an ability. You know, it's a perspective. So if I can experience myself as separate from life, you know, so and for most people that is not when you add the from life, but for most people, I am separate makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
That is the experience kind of being a personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I am separate. Now, of course, we know intellectually, logically, rationally that that's not possible. The only thing that is separate is that we have a skin that divides us, you know, takes up a certain amount of space.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So in that way, you know, I'm sitting here looking at a piece of furniture and there's my foot and I can see that those are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same as I am separate.
Yeah.
And yet that illusion causes us to see everything from a false perspective. So because I can see that this, as Alan Watts would talk about, this bag of skin moves around in space in a different way from other things that either do or do not move around in space, then I am separate. That means that I am separate. But
mm-hmm.
that is actually something that is being, it's like a trick that's happening in the mind, in perception.
Mm.
Right? So yeah, and we do that through that constant conversation about the past and the future.
Okay. Now, you know, shortly after that insight, that, you know, seeing that deep belief, I had this memory of when I think this was born. And so, because it was when I was like 3. I mean, I was still a baby because I had crawled out of my baby bed and gotten into my parents' bed and was lying across their feet, you know, at the foot of their bed because
uh-huh.
I wanted to sleep with them. And my dad, took me back and put me in my bed. And I remember, this is so, I mean, this was really pre-language, but I remember having this feeling that if it could have had words, it would have said, well, I don't know why he was so mad. I was the one that was uncomfortable. You know, I mean, it was like an indignation that a little 3 or 4 year old, you know, I don't know if that's even, well, anyway, I remember that.
And was
and
there
I
a sense that this is not fair or this is not right or this shouldn't be happening or?
Yeah, like I was the one that was uncomfortable lying on their feet. Why was he rejecting me? Why was he putting me away, you know? And you know that, you know what I mean? That
mm-hmm.
that and I remember you saying, you know, that something like we think that what happened to us is who we are.
Right. And I would project that what you're describing is very early stages of that growing sense of otherness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens to human beings as they grow up. And I mean, I don't know. I don't. There are all the, you know, fantasies of, but what if you were raised by wolves, or, you know, but what if you you know, you were raised without any kind of social conditioning. What would, but nobody knows the answer to that. But what seems to happen to human beings as they move through that baby, that infant stage, where it seems that there is no sense of separation, to a growing sense of separation. We can watch children go through stages of development and kind of at least project how much more they are moving away from an identification with everything, kind of a non-separate reality, and into this is me, this is mine, like that, until, you know, the psychology in the Catholic Church at age 7, we think that that process has been completed. Now a child knows that they are who they are, and they are responsible at that point for themselves,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
insane when you stop and think about it. But I think it's pointing to that that illusion of separation is now completely in place.
And I kind of, I don't know if this is helpful thinking or not, but it kind of, when I think about that separation, that growing, I like how you said that growing sense of myself as a separate entity, it feels really sad, you know. It's kind of like the Adam and Eve getting, you know, leaving the garden or something. It's very sad, but it also, in a way, helps me let all parents off the hook in terms of that nothing, you know, there's just,
right.
It's just the way it is. It's the first noble truth, I guess, that's just what life is.
Right, right, yeah. And of course, you know, a lot of folks want to blame somebody else, and so parents are a good target. And of course, this sort of thing is not generally known or talked about. So if it were understood throughout the culture that this is a process that human beings go through, and this is just what happens, and you're not going to stop that process by changing the content. That child is going to go through those stages and experience themselves as a separate self regardless of their family life.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, the thing that I like best about this process is that it enables us to then do, once we catch on to it, those of us in a conversation like this, we can then consciously choose to live in a non-separate reality, knowing full well that the illusion of separation exists, and we don't have to participate in that.
Yeah.
So if you know, a puppy, for the most part, is going to grow up never thinking of itself as separate from life.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what, you know, it's a big part of what makes dogs so charming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no matter what, they don't remember, they don't worry about the future, they don't hold a grudge. You know, they're not blaming somebody else for what's happening to them. So there's just that participation in the moment, fully participating, and unselfconsciously fully participating.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get too carried away with ourselves, it's not hard to project that in many, many, many ways, they are happier than we are.
Yeah.
The advantage that we have is that we can know the level of suffering that is possible for us when we identify ourselves as separate from life, and we can consciously, with intelligence and awareness, choose to come back into the fold and live in present moment, non-separate reality. And so, you know, that we could see that as an advantage over a dog who has no choice about it.
Yeah, and we can see that as that is, in essence, the true joy of being a human being.
Yes, yes, because we live between the worlds. You know, we have the ability to experience heaven. We have the experience. We have the ability to experience hell.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, as far as we can tell, the only creatures that are capable of that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you know the line that the reassurance that's been going through my head all since having this insight drop in is just I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I'm not alone. You know, over and over.
Yeah,
and
there's no such thing. And you know, if we want to have an experience of that, now this is the kind of thing that people will say, oh well, yeah, okay, whatever. But that's because they're listening to a conversation or they're engaged in a conversation with an illusion of a separate self. But if you want to have a quick and pure experience of how you are not alone, just visit for even a split second that little gap between thoughts.
Mm.
And in that little gap, there is no you as a separate distinct entity.
Mm.
There is simply awareness and attention on awareness. You have to think yourself back into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, of course, have, well, not that this is conscious, but the fastest, easiest way to come back into existence, into, now I have to make little quote marks in the air, right, into existence, is through suffering. So that's why looking for what's wrong and what's missing is so popular with the illusion of separation, because it makes that that supposed reality real in a split second.
Yeah, yeah, and not resisting any of it seems really key to ever getting to that place of between the thoughts. So you know, going between heaven and hell, it's like what am I trying to say? Not even having a preference.
Yes, it. If you are simply keeping your attention with awareness,
yeah,
and aware of your attention. So if we lose that focus, then we're just wandering around in conditioning land.
Yeah.
And so you know, something great happens and you're ecstatic, and then something awful. But it's all in this conversation about an imaginary, made-up world that just simply does not exist, but is really compelling because in my made-up world, I'm the most important person. In your made-up world, you're the most important person. So everything that happens to us is terribly compelling and dramatic and real and important and all of that sort of thing. So we, as people who are attempting to wake up, we don't want to just go willy-nilly with whatever is happening.
Mm-hmm.
We want to, it's you know, in meditation, we talk about always coming back to the breath. So there you are, you're sitting, you're with the breath as you're sitting. Okay, maybe you're counting. So you're with the breath and with that number. And the reason that we maintain a focus like that is so that we increase our chances of being in that little gap.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, having a moment or so outside that constant movie that's running inside our heads. So the film stops for a second, and we have a chance to experience what's really there. And then the film, you know, the projector kicks in again, and the film takes off again, and, oh, yeah, there I am, and, oh, God, am I going to live? Am I going to die? This is
we're off and running.
Yeah, we're off and running. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Fun that. Practice stuff, huh?
Do what?
Fun practice stuff.
Oh, it is. Very fun. Well, thanks for the conversation.
Oh, thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have many more callers here.
Oh, good. And I got a little long-winded there, so
okay.
I'll try to speed it up.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Therese.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. Well, I look forward to seeing you this Saturday because I will be in the area.
Very good. Very good.
Very good. Well, what I'm looking at tonight is the earlier caller was just so fabulous. It really points at what I've been kind of looking at.
Uh-huh.
Is how... So I've been sort of getting this other message that how not, I guess I've been getting the I'm not alone a lot and being, I feel like all this conditioning that's been, like you had mentioned, you know, that if you, there's so many ways to get pulled into it. And I just love what's going to start in January. And I've just been getting that message more and more around, I need to pay attention more to the messages that are, you know, bringing me back to Sangha and to that I'm not alone. And rather than just getting sucked into, oh, yeah, I'm all alone here and I, you know, I can't, there's nothing I can do about it.
Okay. So say more about that, that
well,
last part.
Well, so, yeah, so what I got, what I wanted to look at, because it's, so, of course, there's the skeptic in me, and I was like, oh, well, don't believe this. You know, that, so I've had just the last couple of weeks, a couple of things happen at work that some, you know, I want to take it personally. Like, I'm getting attacked, and they're telling me that I'm doing something wrong. And I saw that, and rather than kind of going with that, I've reached out and sort of, okay, collaborate with other people, and how can we work on this, and really looked to practice and, you know, and for, you know, okay, this, that I get it. There's an I that really wants to take this personally. And then I'm kind of hearing this other part that's going, well, what actually, you know, what does this other person need? What's going on with that person? And how are we all connected? And it's kind of this, and it's helped me not, it's helped me to sort of say, this is so not about me. And what if I didn't take it personally? Why am I in this person's life? Why is this person in my life? And how are we all, you know, kind of a more collective consciousness?
And so, but does it feel like it kind of goes into intellectualizing it rather than seeing through it?
Well, that's a good point. Maybe on some level, yeah. And, I guess, well, maybe on some level, but then on another level, it feels like I don't want to just go back to how I always look at it.
Right.
Like, take it personally, that there's something wrong with me. Like, I'm done with, I feel done. Or, you know, many parts of me feel done with that.
And so
it feels like a shift.
Yeah. So opening to other possibilities. Yeah. So the part that I'm kind of curious about is if it feels like that process that you're describing sort of continues a belief in it. It's just diffusing it in a way that makes it easier to get through.
Oh, I see what you mean. So that there's that it's almost, yeah, so it's like an easier way to deal with it.
Yeah, it's like, and there's still a belief that this is true and real, but here's another way to handle it.
Oh, uh-huh.
So, you know, I've been around people.
I'm at the other side of the same process, in a way.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you've run into this, but somebody has something stolen from them. And their response to it is, well, I guess they needed it more than I do.
Right.
Now, on the one hand, that could be great, you know. On the other hand, it can be a kind of a denial.
Mm-hmm. Of like the emotions or the feelings behind it.
Yeah. And
yeah,
in a way that can keep them real, because what's actually going on with a person is not being approached directly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were now, and this is just some place to explore, okay? So I could go into, well, now what is going on with her that she would blah, blah, blah?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm taking this personally, but it's not about me. So what would be going on with her that she is, rather than what's going on with me that I'm taking this personally?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the, what is the personal element? What does, when we take something personally, what does that keep us from being able to see? So if you were to, you know, you and I work together and you say, you know, Sherry, you are always, it seems like you're always there to get the best part for yourself. And I go, oh my gosh, you know, how could you? That's so blah, 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 which I would definitely want to do. And then I could say, well, you know, I don't need to take that personally. What's going on with her that she would, or what? Or I could say,
right.
What's being pointed at here?
Right.
And what is trying, you know, are the two choices, or three choices, how many choices do we have here? Do I need to either accept the assessment from somebody else, feel bad, go to self-hatred. Accept the assessment and then try to figure out what's going on with them that they came up with this assessment. Or might I just look to see what goes on with taking things personally, and is there any valid information in this for me?
Yeah. Well, I guess if I just sit with, definitely in these cases, there's a taking it personally, for sure. And then initially just that I, you know, kind of get that sense of like, well, you shouldn't take it personally. You know, you've got this practice and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Be a good sentient and don't take it personally. And
then, which is just a really fast sidestep around the whole issue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, okay, I shouldn't take it personally. Well, I am taking it personally, okay? So let's just stop right here and see what's that about.
Yeah, so really then the projection of the whole collective thing is like, gosh, all these things started happening sort of all at once, and what is going on all of a sudden? Now there's a collective attacking or something is what that part is feeling, you know, that... where did all this come from? Yeah, I guess there really must be something wrong with me, or maybe I'm in the wrong profession, or, you know, it just goes to that whole place that just wants to make everything wrong about it and then just walk away and leave.
Yes.
So that's typically what the process, that's usually what I do. It's like, well, okay, I'm done with this, got to walk away.
Yeah.
I must not be good at this. This must not be what I'm supposed to be doing, so I'm going to walk away.
Yeah. And which could be true, you know, it could absolutely be true. This is not the place for me to be. And, you know, it's a disservice to you not to explore all of the ways that conditioning, that karma would set something up to keep that. Because, I mean, the fact that you said this is what I always do, you know, this. That's always, you know, that's the big bold banner of karma.
Yeah.
So how is all of this being set up so that that karma steps in and I go, yeah, that's true. And the reason it's true, I mean, come on, I can explain to you why it's true. Because they're doing this and this is happening and I'm feeling this way. And then that, and, you know, I mean, it just makes perfect sense. Of course, the only intelligent, reasonable thing to do is quit and walk away.
Right.
Yeah. And then, of course, with practice, we start seeing, now, wait a minute. Is that really the only option? And why does that option seem to come up so often for me?
Yeah. No, that's definitely it. It's, you know, because I get told I don't like conflict. And I, you know, and then if there's a perceived someone doesn't like me, then, well, I'm supposed to convince them that they should, or, you know, something like that.
And if that doesn't work, then,
you walk away.
Then I'm out of here.
Go find someone else who will like you.
Which, again, is not inherently a bad plan. However, it's that choiceless aspect that trips
right up.
Right.
And it goes back to the whole, it's not what, it's how. So, okay, if there's a choice of, this isn't the place for me, then how am I going to make that choice?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to make it from that same place of, like, I'm just going to run away.
Yeah. You know,
this is
one of the places in there that fascinates me. And now, I'm not saying this would be easy. I, not at all. But one of the things, so, you know, there's somebody at work who you perceive doesn't like you. And and one of the last things on our list of possible approaches is to just make an appointment with that person and say, you know, I feel like there's something about me that you just don't like, that's hard for you, or, you know, kind of rubs you the wrong way, and I would really like for that not to be the case. So can you help me see what that is and see if I can come up with a different approach? Because I would really like for us to be able to work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I actually did. I didn't say it in that many words, but I did say, is there something personally about me or is it a professional thing? And either one, can you work on it? You know, can you let me know what's going on? And that felt helpful to sort of not, because I went into that place of let me make up a story about it and not even talk to this person about it. So, yeah, so I totally get that. Just stay with.
Well, of course, I'm curious. What did the person say?
No, there's nothing, you know, and then went on to say, I'll, you know, kind of give high praises and things like that. And then let's work on this. And I'll tell you if anything, you know. So it seemingly turned out fine, you know. It's good to sort of address it, though, in a way that I've never done that before.
Okay, then this is the point. Here's the homework point for you, okay? You did that, and it sounds like you got a good result from it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the story keeps circulating around in your mind.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
There's I project there's the karma intersection.
Mm.
Because what would be possible is just to say, oh, great, okay, well, that's behind me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But that's not going to serve karma.
Mm-hmm. As someone said before, no reviews.
Yes.
But karma wants to just go on and, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Do a 10-page thesis on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So to watch that, as that story wants to cycle around again and just say, now, wait a minute, why are we having this discussion? Okay, because that was an issue. We're working on that issue. Why are we having this conversation?
Yeah.
And we can begin to see how karma does its magic, how it just keeps circling back around to make a case, circling, interpreting, running it through this filter. There it is through that lens. No, it's actually this. Okay?
Yeah. So
building until finally you find yourself in that place of, I just got to do what I always do.
Yep. Oh, great. Thank you so much.
See you Saturday, huh?
See you on Saturday.
All right. Good night.
Take care. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Therese. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to stop, drop, and breathe, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Finest purveyors since 2008.
Good.
I love it.
I love those cartoons.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. The latest one. I read it today. The, you know, where they're going to blow up the...
I just laughed.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great. It's just... It puts it out there really clearly, and it's light.
Yeah, Yeah, we can step back and yes, both of those things. One, we can get a little bit of distance. We can see the universal nature of it.
Yes.
You know, it wouldn't make a good cartoon if it were only true of me. Okay.
Right.
And so the fact that so many people relate to it, all right, so maybe it's not so personal. I don't have to take this so personally. There's a lightness to it. It's just like, it's a cartoon. It's a joke. It's a comedy.
Yes.
I need to remember to laugh.
Yes. Yes. Sherry, we have many more callers.
I know. It's just that these darn people are so interesting. You know, what they've got going on is fascinating to me, and I just, it's not my fault, Michael.
I hear you.
It's their fault for being so fascinating.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I think last time we talked, I was saying that we had recently sold our home, and a home of over 20 years, about 25 years, and I had a big garden there, and I had a creek in the back, and so on.
Yep.
We're now living in a rented townhouse in suburbia, and, you know, there was this part of me that was just really grieving the loss of that. And I couldn't quite see whether what I was doing was just, but that part of me was just simply grieving that, and that would be over with, or that this was another depression coming on. And we sort of discussed that a little bit, and you said, well, you just don't know. And I guess I still don't know for sure, but it certainly feels like depression ditch again. And not surprising, because this karma has been going on all my life, and, you know, it's just one more round.
Yeah, one more round and big life circumstances.
Right, right. So the combination is, you know, I mean, there's plenty of material for self-hate to use, you know, plenty of opportunity to believe it, to believe that we, you know, did the wrong thing and never should have done that, and, oh, my God, what did we do? And last chance for happiness is gone and all that stuff. So all that's going on, and I realize that what I'm feeling more than anything else, or what this part of me is feeling that I'm identified with, is just terror. I mean, it's not, I mean, yes, there's, you know, the idea of depression being, you know, low energy and wanting to sleep and, you know, not having any enthusiasm for anything, you know, that's all there too. But there's this tremendous terror that is just gripping. I mean, it's almost like a panic, like a medium grade panic going on all the time. It seems very old. It seems as though I've been looking at some photographs of myself that I dug up recently when I was much younger, and I can see it there. You know, I can see that this is a very young part of me who was absolutely terrified of the world, terrified of life. And I, you know, I tried doing the non-dominant hand and things like that, and that's what I hear.
Okay,
so
let me ask you this: how physical are you?
Pardon?
How physical are you?
Well, you mean what do I do physically?
Yeah.
Well, I try to walk every day, and every morning I get up, and the first thing I do is some fairly strenuous yoga and exercise, and then some meditation. But could I be doing more? Absolutely.
Okay, because see, I don't think there is a psychological answer to that. You know, this is my projection, that those are sensations in the body that do not relate to anything other than sensations in the body that have gotten stories attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to find out what that person is terrified of.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is alter your relationship with the sensations. With me?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I am. I understand that intellectually, and even essentially, I can do that to some degree.
Well, the some degree is based on a tremendous amount of resistance from egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get up in the morning and you do vigorous exercise, do you feel better afterwards?
I'm not sure whether I feel a little bit better because I've sort of kept to my schedule and not slept in and, you know.
But just the sensations in your body.
I think somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. I would just darn near bet it. Because when that energy builds up and it's building up in your third chakra, right, your second and third chakra,
mm-hmm.
and it's anxiety, having about 8 cups of strong coffee,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and then it just starts kicking in, all of the stories that get associated with those sensations in the body.
Mm-hmm.
When we are using that energy in a way that keeps it flowing so that
mm-hmm.
it doesn't get to get stopped up in karmic habitual ways,
mm-hmm.
then the sensations are not connecting in the same way with those words and those stories, and we have a different life experience. So, you know, we've probably had this conversation before, but my encouragement to you is, what's the weather like where you are?
It's cold, but it's, you know, it's. I was just, you know, walking, took a long walk today and went through the woods, and I was comfortable.
Okay. And how is it when you're walking? Not the weather, you.
It's better.
Yeah. Okay. That's, you know, that's going to be my encouragement to you. I would suggest that it would be a great time for you to start training to walk a marathon.
Mm.
And I don't mean just strolling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean walking.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out there like you're going somewhere.
Mm.
So that when you come back from that, you're actually physically tired.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to sleep because your body is tired. Not
yeah.
because
yeah.
The sensations are being clamped down upon and controlled by karma.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's my best encouragement. And since you know you feel better when you're out there moving,
mm-hmm.
and since you don't have a lot to do other than that, is that correct?
Right.
You're not working full-time or anything.
No.
Yeah. So there. That's your full-time job. It, and to do that with conscious awareness so that you get really tuned in to where the energy is in your body, where it gets blocked up, how it feels to move it. You know, you can practice consciously moving that energy. You know, your right foot is on the ground and you feel that energy move up through your body. Your left foot touches the ground. You feel the energy go in. And just repeat that. feeling the energy, consciously moving the energy in your body as your body moves. Letting it go. And of course, since you're a meditator, you know, you can be focused on mindfulness practices the whole time you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I breathe in peace, I breathe out joy. I breathe in ease, I breathe out happiness. I breathe in happiness, I breathe out compassion. I'm breathing and I'm letting go. And what you're doing is beginning to retrain your system not to go to those old habit patterns.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do it. Plus it's fun.
All right. I will.
It's so much more fun than sitting around feeling like tutu.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Get outside. Get out in nature.
Yeah.
Do you get the peace quotes, George?
Yes.
Yeah. I mentioned this in the email class recently, too. I was so struck by it. The one by Wendell Berry about when he wakes up and he's worried about his life and his family's life and what he does.
You know, I just realized I haven't been getting them recently because my email address changed and I have to go into the website and correct that. So.
Yes, you do, because
yes.
That was a good one. I'll see if I can get somebody to forward it on to you.
Okay.
Yeah. So email in, okay? And I'll see if I can get somebody to send that to you. Because it's something you could, you know, those are the words you want to live by.
Mm.
Yeah. All these issues that we have with conditioned mind can disappear in nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, keep me posted, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a couple minutes left here, and I think time for one more caller. Are you there, Sherry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm mumbling.
No problem. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Todd calling from snowy, freezy Canada.
Oh, you Canadians, you're so competitive with that snow business.
We are. We're very hardy.
Yes,
we're hardy
you
group.
Are. You are tough folk.
And I giggle when California gets snow because we get it 6 months a year and we're so accustomed to it. And it's so regular part of our daily existence. So I have to giggle when the monastery is, they have to hike in.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. Especially coming back from Zambia. I can just see Alex and Dave at the gate hiking in with their suitcases down the road.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think having all that snow up there is what makes you people so kind and sort of good-natured?
Well, Sherry, I think it does. I was just at the supermarket the other day, and there was 2 feet of snow, and this lady was struggling with her cart, and I just dropped everything and went over and helped her, and it's sort of like you sort of got to look out over your shoulder a lot here because it's minus 35. There's 2 feet of snow on the ground, and you get a blizzard every 2-3 days. So I think it really lends to just we got to kind of get out of ourselves a lot of the time
gotta
to survive.
Got to stick together, huh?
Yeah, and you know, it's so common. You'll see a car, like, stalled at the side of the road, and you'll see 3 cars stop just to lend a hand.
Yeah.
It's you know, you're not alone very long if you're in trouble here in snow. That's a neat thing.
Yeah.
That's a neat thing. So you've got Sangha around you all the time.
Exactly.
It's fun to see that. It's really fun to see that. So, actually, I'm just going to quickly say weather used to be a real karma for me with suffering.
Mm.
And you know, my suffering has really lessened a lot lately with the What You Practice email class.
Mm-hmm.
It's re-solidified my practice. We talked through the summer. I came back from the deepening practice retreat and had super, super wicked backlashes for months and months and months. And then this email class came along, and it's like you said, we can outlast conditioning.
Isn't it the truth?
And I've proven that to myself. I outlasted it. My practice took us a lot of hits,
mm-hmm.
and it got extremely inconsistent. But the last 30 days of this email class, it's back for where it was before the deepening practice retreat, as consistent and as solid as ever, or more solid.
Yeah. Well, that's true, because each time conditioning would like us to believe that, oh, you've fallen off the wagon, you've failed, you might as well just quit. But every time we come back, we are stronger.
You know, all the tools are there, and the sitting is consistent, and the LBK, I still use a lot of the LBK tools, and I use the email tools, and I'm just fulfilling a commitment today to myself. I love honoring agreements and keeping them with myself, is to phone into the show regularly and to listen to the archive. So this is also an honoring agreement, because I think the last assignment was, how are we going to support ourselves? And one of my things was to call into the show and use the archives as support.
Good for you.
So, and I'm fulfilling that commitment tonight, and it feels great.
Yeah.
Feels
really the great. More surrounded we feel ourselves to be by Sangha, the better our chances are of not ever giving up on ourselves, or if we do, getting back in the saddle as quickly as possible.
And just recommitting.
Yeah, recommitting.
And I've got to say, the first time I'm in this practice for quite a long time, you talk about the gaps between the thoughts. This last month, I have suffered a lot less than I ever have in my whole life. And it's so true what you say. You will suffer less if you practice.
Oh, yeah.
And the more I practice, the less I suffer. And it's like I'm finally getting that connection.
Right.
But I never experienced it before.
You know? Yeah.
And then, because conditioning was so overwhelming.
Yeah. And then after a while, we go, well, now, why wouldn't I want to be practicing all the time?
Yes.
You know, I can either not practice and be miserable.
And suffer.
Or I can live in conscious compassion and awareness all the time and be happy.
It takes a while, though.
It does.
Because the layers of conditioning are so ingrained and from my experience, so heavy, and you slog through, you do, but you recommit, and then all of a sudden you come to that point like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I got to look back, and I'm not suffering all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, I've got longer moments of not suffering than suffering.
Yeah.
When I'm practicing.
Love that. Yeah. Yeah, you hit that tipping point, and suddenly you realize, wow, I suffer less than I suffer. Wow.
I do. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's different for every person, and I know there's no time frame, and I know you can't look at it. But for me, it's happened, and it's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And it's so great to see that, and I think I just said that somewhere in the email class, was that, you know, stopping and acknowledging that periodically, just looking back over our lives, just pick a point back in the unconscious, misery-driven past, and then look at where my life is now and just say a heartfelt thank you.
You did mention that in the email class. And you also made it as an assignment in the LBK class of just, you know, write out what your life was before practice and write out what your life is like now after practice.
Uh-huh.
I go back to that a lot.
That's
and
different.
I do look at those. I look at column A and column B.
Yeah.
There's just, it's night and day. It's the dark room and the light room.
Yeah. I love it.
And it's a great encouragement, and it's a great thing to see. So we're probably out of time, but it's always great to get in the tail end.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's great to hear your encouraging words as we go off into our evening. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Sherry, and thanks for the support of the show and the practice and the monastery and the monks and yourself and Michael and everyone. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, we are too. Thank you.
I'm so grateful for everything. We'll talk soon. It's my commitment to continuing to support myself.
That's right.
Soon
All right.
and regularly.
Stay warm.
Well, you too.
Okay.
And dig yourselves out there.
All right.
Thanks, Michael. Bye, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Don. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, there are several folks here who we are not going to talk to tonight.
I know. Well, I almost hate to say next week, because it does seem like one of those. You could probably call in at any time, and I don't know. When people call in, Michael, when you call in, are calls answered in the order in which they are received?
Yes, they are.
Oh yeah. Well, okay then.
So it's a big encouragement to call.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah.
Even before the show goes live, you can.
Yeah, and I would like to. Say that I will strive to be more succinct, but I don't know. I don't seem to be successful at that. And once again, it's people's fault for being too interesting.
Yes, and I'm feeling big gratitude for you and everyone who calls in and everyone who participates and everyone who supports. It's, I feel like I'm in the slipstream of all of it.
Yeah, isn't it great? Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Being there and making it happen.
Okay, you too.
Talk to you next week.
Yep.
Bye.
Good night.